Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. KHOI Community Radio is celebrating its 10th year on the air. Happy birthday, KHOI. Well, Labor Day has come and gone, Labor Day weekend, and it was a lovely Labor Day weekend here in central Iowa, and I hope we all took a little time to remember the labor of food production that brings all those good things to your plate. There are people out there all along the way working hard for all of us. So three cheers for the laborers in the agriculture industry. And everybody else, too, that helps keep us civilized and fed and warm
fed.
And healthy. And yeah, we are. Okay. Labor Day has come and gone. So, but that means the summer has come and gone. Where did it go? My goodness.
Well, as long as I'm eating corn on the cob and tomatoes, it's still summer.
That's true. I sort of measure my seasons by what I'm eating, too. So I've got lots of sweet corn to eat yet and lots of melons. I haven't eaten enough melons yet. So,
oh, the melons right now just are perfect. I've been feeling like there's so much bounty, like, well, because I'm the recipient of bushels of tomatoes from both Lana and from Helen Gunderson. And my kitchen is just full of produce. And it feels like just luxury time. You know, there's so many people in the whole world that are not, don't have enough food. And plenty of people in our country that don't have enough food. And even people who don't grow any of their own food are probably not going to have this many tomatoes, you know, because actually tomatoes at the farmer's market were $4 a pound. Now that's, you know, you don't, unless you're really, really rich, you don't buy that many tomatoes anymore. And so to have so many wonderful tomatoes and delicious melons. And of course, we all have plenty of corn on the cob right now in Iowa. So
that's
this
good.
Is like, this is our luxury, you know.
It is.
It's a pretty good life.
It is. Oh, I want to remind people, those of us that have gardens, when you've got way too much, remember there are food banks around the area that can use your donations, and they will be glad to see you.
Or your friends. I'm happy to report that it's wonderful to be the recipient of all of this bounty.
Yes. Right? Yes. Good. Good. Well, so today on the Donald in the Kitchen, well, nothing trips our collective trigger better than a bunch of new cookbooks. And Donna got a bunch, and you know, we're passing them between us back and forth. And we realize we'd like to share what we found. And actually, we'll be doing it over the next couple weeks. And also, this is the time of the year to think about your pantry. What do you keep on the shelf or in the refrigerator? We'll be talking about the book No Recipe Recipes by Sam Shifton, and he starts out his book with what's in the pantry. Talk about pantry,
well,
Donna.
You know, with all of this wonderful produce, you know, you got tomatoes and corn and all of these things, and then you start cooking. You don't want to just eat a plate of tomatoes with salt on them every day, or or even with corn. You don't. I mean, sometimes I eat it plain. Sometimes I put salt and butter on it. Sometimes I get more fancy and put all kinds of things on it. So I was thinking, well, we haven't really explored what's in people's pantries. Now, everybody keeps different things in their pantries, but there are some commonalities. And so there are a bunch of new cookbooks that talk about what's in your pantry and specifically, like this No Recipe Recipes, he's a New York Times food writer, so his pantry is a little bit New Yorkish. And I have a couple of other books that we'll be talking over in the next few shows. The Otto Linge has a new book called shelf love about what's in their test kitchen that they use to make up new recipes, and then another cookbook, because it's, maybe it's me planning for winter, but I've also been, there are things when you live in the middle of Iowa that you have to kind of look for. You don't just find them easily, maybe at the supermarket. And so there are some things that I do order online. So I recently put in an order to burlap and barrel, where I love to get really unusual or very delicious spices. Or King Arthur baking catalog has some, I bought a new almond extract that is just to die for, and it is better than the standard one that you can buy on the shelf here. So there are just tricks. You know, I call them the tricks to cooking, where you're just getting a little more flavor out of it. And this often happens, and chefs like to, some are really selfish and won't share their tricks. But other ones, you get a bunch of any kind of people that are into cooking together, and they talk about, I use this and I use that, and have you tried this? And you know, we share things back and forth, and, Lana, I forgot to give you the bottle of almond extract that I got is so huge. I won't use it all in a million years. So I thought, I got to get a little glass jar and give half of it to Lana.
What,
you know, so
why? What a good idea.
There are just tricks. And I was thinking of some of these things, that maybe we should talk about, because it's a trick, it's usually something that's easy. That if you have it on the shelf, you add it into a recipe. And the thing with this Sam, the three cookbooks that I ordered that we'll be talking about all are kind of how to improvise using the basics and what you identify as your own basics in your pantry. So for this no recipe book, this is of course the New York Times, it's basically how to throw together food that tastes good kind of quickly. And, you know, I mean, sure, we've been having fun, you know, oven roasting tomatoes and spending hours in the kitchen. But as I said, it is a bit of a luxury. I don't do this every day. So here we go. His book starts with, it says, you do need a pantry.
You need it, basically. And I know we all have things on the shelf that maybe we used for one recipe, and then we forgot what this thing was, and there's this unidentified jar back there, and we don't want to throw it away, but you have to get a little more adventuresome and realize what that stuff tastes like and use it. Give it a try.
Part of the problem, if you're following a recipe religiously, is that person, you know, then you make a list of things that you have to run out to the store and buy. Well, neither Lana and I really cook like that, and maybe most people don't cook like that anymore at all either. You kind of look in the fridge and go, well, what do I have, and what can I do with it? And right now we have so many piles and piles of tomatoes and lots of okra and of things like that. So you're going, what do you do? Well, for the okra, maybe you need a little bit of curry powder, for example, to change it up or something. Or last night we were talking about, what were we talking about? Tomatillos. Yeah, what to do with all these tomatillos? And what did we decide? We decided we were going to try to make this Georgian plum sauce, because it's a sour, it's ketchup in Georgia kind of things, but we don't have the right kind of plums here. So we were trying to figure out how to use tomatillas, because they're a little bit sweet and very sour. And so we were going to try putting some Georgian spices, which we decided included coriander, fenugreek, marigold.
Mint,
yes. And cook down some tomatillas, because Lana has
some. And maybe some hot pepper, evidently this sauce, this plum sauce, which we'll probably try with tomatillas, make your own sort of ketchupy stuff. And this, And evidently, you make it to your taste. You want it hot, you want it sweet, you want it spicy,
and it depends on what's in your pantry.
So it depends on what's in your pantry. And it sounds pretty darn good. Yes, it does.
Like Sam Sifton's pantry that he... So he starts the book with a list of things, and he, of course, he says alliums, and it includes, of course, so he says you need onions and garlic and maybe shallots, and definitely onions and garlic. I cannot be without onion. And then canned beans, baking supplies, butter, of course, canned fish, cheese, cured meats, fruits and nuts, eggs, oils, pasta, rice, stock, and sugars. Then he goes through vegetables, and then, now here's the difference, on herbs and spices, he's only listed 12 things. For me, I was like, what?
But think, Donna, me too. I've got little jars of, what in the world is
hundreds
that?
Hundreds of little jars. Too many little jars. But
of course, we need all of them. But it's good to know that they're there and kind of perk our brains up about using them again.
Yeah, well, his basic list includes furikake, which is that Japanese sprinkle on stuff.
Yes,
that's not my basic go-to.
I was going to ask you, what is the word is a furikake? It sounded like a little, like, I don't know.
I hope we're pronouncing this right. I have no idea. F-U-R-I-K-A-K-E. It's mostly usually seaweed and sesame seeds. It's very good, and it's kind of basically you just can sprinkle it on white rice or many other things and, you know, stuff like that. For his condiments, he has capers, chili crisp. I don't even know what he means by chili crisp. Chutney, fish sauce, hoisin sauce, ketchup, mayonnaise, miso, mustard, olives, oyster sauce, rice wine, sour cream, soy sauce, sriracha, tahini, vinegars, red, black, and balsamic, and rice. Yes. Worcestershire sauce.
Yes. Now, you think about, we all probably have one of those bottles. There they are. What in the world is in Worcestershire sauce?
And I bet your refrigerator doors are full of condiments, right?
What is in Worcestershire sauce? I looked it up. Besides being hard to spell, Worcestershire sauce is a fermented condiment. It has all kinds of things. Distilled vinegar, anchovies, garlic, molasses, onion, salt, chili pepper extract, sugar, cloves, and tamarind extract.
Didn't know that.
Huh. Yeah, and here's, it was made in Worcestershire, England, of course, and now a lot of people make it. And now it's mostly a generic term for what. There's a lot of different flavors. Interestingly enough, the version of Lee and Perrin's Worcestershire sauce sold in the United States differs from their UK recipe. The American version, guess what, is sweeter and saltier than the version sold in Britain and Canada. There. So that's what's in your... And what's kind of nice about this stuff, it's mostly all shelf-stable, so it's kind of ready for a dash onto different things.
We one of the books that we're going to do in a few weeks, what's it called? The Modern Larder or something like that. So I looked up what the difference was between pantry and larder, because larder has been kind of popularized or repopularized again lately among chefs. And so apparently... Before we had mass refrigeration, because we're going way back, there were different rooms for different things. Like there was a larder room that had, must have been colder because it had lard, for example, and things that were more slightly perishable, as opposed to the pantry, which just has to be dry and hopefully dark. Some things do better in the dark, like I'm fermenting the tomatoes. We'll see how it goes. But they have to sit in the dark for 10 days. So it's in the pantry shelf. Yeah. I mean, most people have a pantry shelf, which is like a big cupboard. I actually have a walk-in pantry because I have way too many things in my pantry. But
it's a fantastic
place. I call it the best room in the house, you know. That is what we call our pantry or our larder.
Well, good. Well, getting back to this book that we have in front of us, we decided to take these books one book at a time here. Otherwise, we're just overwhelmed. So this book, The No Recipe Recipe by Sam Shiffen. I must say, I looked at this, I thought, that's the way I look. A list of ingredients.
Cook, yeah, you cook like this.
And there's a picture. And then in between is a little paragraph that sort of deals with things like I do. Some. You take some, and then you put some with it, and then you do some more. And having a well-stocked pantry and helps, because you can, oh, yeah, I could try that. Some. We'll add some of this.
Or he'll say a glug of olive oil,
for example. That is a universal measure, is a glug. Yes, it is. And Donna, last week, did out of this book, did a recipe called brown butter tomatoes, which is browning butter and putting it over tomatoes.
Really simple.
Really simple, really good. However, we are here to report. We are here to report. It's kind of a little segue here.
Yes, I nearly killed myself making this really simple recipe.
Cooking is dangerous. Tell what happened with your brown butter recipe.
This was one of my dumber mistakes, but it was kind of late at night, and we had just had the show and talked about this recipe, and I thought, I've got these tomatoes. I'll just make a little plate before I, you know, close out the kitchen for the night and hop up to bed. And so I sliced the tomatoes on a plate. I put some butter, like not much, tablespoon and a half or something, into a small pan, really small pan, like a 6-inch saucepan. And I turned the heat on. And then my computer dings, right? And it is a message of something that said, oh, you may have been scammed or something or other. So immediately I'm refocusing on what is going on with my computer. And I'm sitting in the kitchen table and I look up and the whole pan is on fire. And the flames are like more than a foot tall. And I run over and throw a pan lid on. And, of course, it's the wrong size pan lid. Most of it goes out, but not all of it. And then it gets hot, and I manage to singe my eyebrows and drop the pan on the floor, and now I have burn marks and grease marks on my wooden floor, and fortunately, and smoke everywhere, right? So I close the kitchen off so the fire alarm doesn't go off, because the dog hates the fire alarm. I hate the fire alarm, right? And open all the windows, and, you know, I did not burn myself, thank goodness, and I did not set off the fire alarm, but I did not get a chance to taste the tomatoes, because I burned all the brown butter sage. So be careful in the kitchen.
Cooking is dangerous business, and I think there must be something in the moon and stars, because two days before Donna...
Yes, let's blame it on the moon and stars instead of my distraction and ineptitude.
Well, no, because I had a kitchen kerfuffle too. I hang some large pans above in the ceiling of my kitchen, and me being not the tallest person, I can just reach them and I can just get them off their hook. And this has never happened before, but I reached up to get one of them and knocked another pan, which came right down on my head, hit me right in the nose, and then bounced and hit me on the lip. So it could have been a lot worse. And no, they were not cast iron. They were just some stainless steel pans I had.
But they weren't small.
They weren't small. That's why I put them on the ceiling, so they're up out of the way. So that was my kitchen kerfuffle. However, if you think you've got problems, I was talking to my friend Ben, and he was just helping a friend clean up a 50-pound or 50-gallon barrel of honey that tipped. Not his. He was helping a friend tip. And so they were cleaning up a 50-pound barrel of honey. And then
that's industrial size.
Oh, yeah. However, he said, and then that's not even the worst food disaster. He was trying to make his friend feel better for losing so much honey. If you want to look up something, look up the Great Molasses Flood of 1919. This is, I got this from Wikipedia, but I heard about this first from Ben. January 15th, 1919, in Boston, Massachusetts.
Cold, yes.
So it was cold, and they were, along the shoreline there, there was a big factory that was dealing in a huge bunch of molasses, and they don't quite know what happened. The cause of this disaster was called cylinder stress. Anyway, this big, big vat of molasses burst, and they think it's because they added hot molasses to the cold molasses that was in there. Anyway, a large storage tank filled with 2.3 million gallons of molasses, weighing approximately 13 tons, my goodness, burst, and the resultant wave of molasses rushed through the streets of Boston at an estimated, now this is molasses, you know, as slow as molasses, but listen to this, estimated 35 miles an hour, killing 21 people, injuring at 150, and it's part of Boston. History, who would have thought? And people died by drowning in molasses, and it started to congeal, and it started to congeal around horses, and other people like got stuck. Okay. So this wave was at 1.25 feet high. They could measure it on the buildings, and it moved about 35 miles an hour.
Goodness, that's rather.
And so, anyway, waist deep, covered the streets. It was nasty. And if you want to clean up something not so good, let's try some molasses. They say Boston smelled kind of sweet and sticky for a long, long time.
Molasses is such a funny product. My mother told me this story, and probably goes back to about that time. Whenever I think of molasses, she said, as a child, it had to be a toddler, somebody who was like sitting up, but you put a little molasses on each of their forefingers, and then you give them a feather. And they spend hours moving the feather back and forth between the sticky fingers. Baby toy.
What? What a good idea. That's great. So, Dyson, you got to try that brown butter tomato, and I will. But I will be really careful because besides, you've mentioned in the past, cooking, you're there in the kitchen with all those sharp knives and people moving fast.
And butter is like in India, they make candles, votive candles out of butter fat, you know, and they dip a little cotton in it and make a twirly point to it, and that is a candle. Butter is very flammable.
Ha! Be careful out there. We're going to come back and talk more about this No Recipe Recipes book because there's a lot of good things to share in there. But first, I remind you, this is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Kitchen. It was a Barn Owl band playing a tune called Texas Gals. We're talking about pantry adventures, strange adventures that we've had in our kitchen recently, but also we are talking about things that you have in your kitchen and you just want to use them, and you might as well try using them in a different way. I mentioned this book, No Recipe Recipes by Sam Shifton. I looked at that book and said, yeah, I cook like that. I do. There's an interesting recipe Did you make this? It's good.
I tried this one.
Yeah. It's called Savory French Toast with Cherry Tomatoes and Basil. Now, who would think you'd put those two together, but look at it.
It's just what you think it is. You make your French toast, but instead of putting maple syrup on it, while the toast is in the pan cooking, you plop in the cherry tomatoes, of which we have wonderful ones right now, and some fresh basil leaves.
Ah.
He calls it breakfast anytime. I think I had it for dinner, actually, one night.
Yeah, see, it's one, and there isn't really a recipe. It's just stuff you need, and you do this stuff, and you make French toast, and there it is. What a good idea. I like that. Another one that I sort of liked was, you pulled it up. It was page one, two, something with pot stickers.
Oh, yeah, this one caught my eye, too. I think I'll definitely try it.
Pot stickers. Now, see, that's something I had to learn about because I grew up in Wisconsin. They don't have
right, but, you know, it's in the, it's a, it says, I'll read, he's a good writer, of course, because he writes for the New York Times. He says, you absolutely do not need a recipe ever to cook with inexpensive Chinese, Japanese, or Korean frozen dumplings. Often labeled pot stickers. But I learned to cook them better after I read the blogger and author Mandy Lee's exhortation to combine them with an Italianish tomato sauce in her wondrous, strange cookbook, The Art of Escapism Cooking, another cookbook. But it's basically, you know, you make your whatever you want for you would use for your pasta sauce, and then you cook the... You simmer it in the skillet, and then you add the dumplings and cook them straight from the freezer right in the pasta sauce. And that's it.
I like
that.
Stir
in a little cream at the end, serve with grated Parmesan, and drizzle over some olive oil.
Oh, that's good. That's good. See, we have this stuff. Just use it in different ways. Here is another one. Ketchup and kimchi fried rice. Now talk about taking a jar and put it on some fried rice. This is he's also big on adding an egg to things, which is okay too. But yeah, why not? Ketchup is there, and ketchup actually is a wide term. The kind of sweet red stuff we have. There's all kinds of different ketchup. It doesn't have to be all that fancy, but. Why not use that bottle of ketchup for something besides your hot dogs?
I'll tell you. So it's here's the list of ingredients. Neutral oil, scallions, carrots, garlic, kimchi, cooked chilled white rice, ketchup, soy sauce, and eggs. And the directions are, add a bit of oil to the hot wok and stir fry thinly sliced scallions, garlic, carrots, and kimchi. Then add a couple cups of leftover white rice and fry until crisp. Hit that mixture with some ketchup and a splash of soy sauce and stir to combine. Crack a couple of eggs into a bowl and break them up with a fork so it's like a fried rice, right? And open a hole in the middle of the wok, tip the eggs into it, mix to cook the eggs and combine everything once more. That's dinner right there, and soon again another night.
Very good. See, these really kind of fun things to do.
Would be good for cooking with, like, older children, too.
Yeah.
Or teenagers, you know?
And it sounds a good way to use things out of the refrigerator.
Yes.
Very good.
Sounds like, to me, that and the pot stickers sound things like what my 18-year-old grandson would eat, you know?
That's true. You could do
kids food.
Actually, yes. He can do it, too.
Yeah.
Very good.
And they wouldn't have to get the recipe from TikTok, okay?
Right, no, get the recipe from your grandma, for goodness sake. Yeah. Another just taste test, okay? Pasta with blue cheese and walnuts. That sounds really good.
Especially autumnal, don't you think?
Yeah, I like that.
I think we'll probably have that in the next couple of months or
it's
something.
It's good.
Yeah.
I like his way of cooking. That's really good. Also, he's got things to do with peanut butter, which I sort of like. Peanut butter is a good addition as a base for a sauce. But then, if you don't like peanut butter, almond butter is in our pantry or in our refrigerator at our house. So almond butter gets used for a lot of things. putting. Oh, actually, you can make a peanut sauce and not even put it on a hot thing. But he's got a recipe for putting a peanut sauce over shaved cucumbers or shaved zucchini as kind of a dressing.
For a peanut salad.
Peanut salad.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
Here's one that the picture kind of caught my eye. Makes it sound really exotic. Maybe this is for New Yorkers.
This is New Yorkers, okay.
Crab Rangoon Burgers, right? So it's really a burger. Let's see. Crab Rangoon, fried dumplings filled with crab speckled cream cheese, is an appetizer you'll find in the menus of Chinese restaurants across America. Then he says it's shockingly delicious, and if you're not inebriated, it's easy to make at home. So you take the burger and you make, it says all you need to do is flake a can of supermarket crab meat. Okay, but the cheap and dirty trick is the fake crab meat, right? So then it's not expensive. And thin it out with a little Worcestershire sauce and soy sauce and maybe a blob of mayonnaise and mix until it tastes just right. Cook your burger patties. Smashed on a hot oil-slick cast iron pan, toast the buns, use the crab mixture as a generous topping for the burgers, along with a pile of chopped cabbage and a dash of hot sauce.
That sounds very, very elegant.
It just sounds quite exotic, but quite sloppy and wonderful and
easy. Using the things that, okay, maybe I've purchased something like that, and there it sits, but have the courage to get out that can opener and give it a try. I like that. That's good. You find anything else in there?
Goodness, there's hundreds of them that are just ridiculous.
As in, why didn't I think of that?
Well, there are also some very New York-y things. Yeah. There was the one where you melt the duck pate onto the, what was it, the pasta of some sort. You know, I think, oh, right. Well, if you live in New York, maybe that's in your pantry.
I don't think we have duck pate at our local 7-Eleven.
No, we don't.
Maybe Casey's would
carry
that.
Everybody's pantry is different.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have good sweet corn out the back door.
They don't.
That's too bad for them.
No.
That's good.
Well, Kale is coming to the garden, so he has it's kind of a normal recipe. A smoky bowl of braised kale is a fine accompaniment to grilled chicken, but it's equally good alone atop a bowl of rice. And so his version is just olive oil, onion, garlic, tomatoes paste, paprika, vegetable stock, red wine vinegar, the kale, of course, and then some red pepper flakes. You just throw it all in the dish. And you could also, he says, of course, do it with collards. And if you don't have chicken stock, you just use water, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I mean, simple, simple, simple.
I made out of that book something called a New Mexican hot dish. A hot dish, I can relate to that. Yes, it's basically enchiladas without all of the fuss. So enchiladas, you usually roll them up and try to make them pretty. Just kind of chuck that idea and layer it. Cook the thing.
Oh, so you just put the tortillas in like a cooked lasagna noodle.
Yes. Oh, you do warm them. You can toast them in a pan first, get them warm and lay in it. Mm-hmm. But so it looks like lasagna, sort of. But also this works out well because I have a lot of stuff from the garden, the peppers and the tomatoes that need you. And I didn't use ground beef. See, again, use what you have. I have some ground lamb because lamb is something we have occasionally, quite often at our house. And so I use ground lamb instead. I just happened to have all that stuff in my, and I had the jalapeno and garlic and onions from the garden. So there you go. And it was good. And it's one of those that you make and the leftovers the next day are really good. Because it was enough for it was way too much for two people.
Is that the pan that you dropped on your head when you were making this?
No, it's a good thing. No, that was a Pyrex pan I made that.
Oh, okay.
We didn't want that in. No, it is not good. Okay, good.
So he's just layering in cooked meat. Mm-hmm. And you must have used some of your wonderful fresh tomatoes.
Tomatoes, yeah.
Layers of tomatoes and the corn tortillas, and then lots of cheese.
Yeah, cheese. Yeah. I like
with some Mexican flavoring.
I like what he's saying. You can be a purist, I suppose, but the author of this book says, I go mostly with cheddar and a little American cheese. Sue me if you don't like those. Those are just fine. They melt nice and they're good, and that's what I have.
Well, yeah, and then you need your Mexican flavorings, which, of course, are chili, cumin, oregano. He's got jalapeno, and, of course, garlic.
Yes, and I bet everybody's got a little can of salsa in some place or other. Maybe your can of salsa, like mine, so occasion, or the jar has got some stuff growing on the top. You might want to either remove that or something, get a new one. But the hot sauce on the top was a lovely little addition. That was good.
Oh, yeah, you need something to make it wet a little bit. Yeah. So some salsa.
Good. And then he talks about meatloaf. And meatloaf is one of those things that it's not really a recipe. It's some and some meat, and it can be any kind of meat, mainly shallots, egg.
I make one with no. He starts off by saying, making meatloaf without a recipe is good fun and self-affirming to boot.
There you go.
For our improvisatory recipe, this one reads especially bossy, even for me. I'll give you the executive summary. You may want the loaf to be moist with fats so that the finished dish is not dry but packed with flavor. This makes for a fantastic dinner alongside mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes or sweet peas. So he uses ground meat, shallots, eggs, breadcrumbs, milk, baked bacon. Of course, it's going to be good. Some oil, ketchup, and hot sauce. Now, I use my standard recipe is I'm going a little heavier on the vegetables. I use a lot of grated carrots. Well, they're actually not grated. I grind them in the food processor so that they're the texture of ground meat. It was my trick for getting children to eat vegetables. So, and I use cornmeal to soak up the juices instead of breadcrumbs. You know, I mean, you can just
I use either
put whatever you want.
My mom used to use crunched up cornflakes or oatmeal.
Of course.
Some of this dry stuff that's in your pantry. What will soak up juices? Use some of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Yes, very good. And again, and then you bake it. I put it in a little loaf pan, like I'm making a little loaf of bread, and bake it that way in the oven.
Yeah, and I always you got to put something red on top. So my recent go-to has been a mixture of ketchup and salsa.
Oh, yeah. Not strawberries or something like that.
No,
tomato goes
on.
Oh, tomatoes, peppers would be
right,
good.
Right, peppers would be good, too. I think for years people just put ketchup on top, but I kind of, you got to fuddle around with it a little bit. Put your own signature on it. So
this idea of it's nice to have a whole book written well with good inspiration.
Which is and encourages you to make your own rules. We like that.
Make your own rules. Go and see what you've got and do it. Yes. Before we take another break here, let's kind of get back to the pantry. What can you... His list, and I think all of us maybe have something like this. What about salt and kosher salt? Is that really necessary? What's with the salt?
I think the main thing is to... Different salts are... Well, like sea salt is can be finely ground or flaky. So like a teaspoon of sea salt is much, if it's finely ground, you're getting more salt than if you're using the flaky. So whatever salt you're using, you need to kind of be really familiar with the saltiness of the salt. So where was I reading this? The idea is, the Morton's iodized salt that everybody used when I was growing up has, of course, iodine in it, and it has other things that make it flow all the time. You know, like you see the picture of the girl on the front with the umbrella indicating rain and moisture, and yet the salt is flowing. It's because they've put some anti-caking agents in it. Now, some people don't like to use that kind of salt for cooking, because it can impart a metallic taste. After all, it has it has iodine in it, among other things. So if you want a salt on your table shakers that is always going to flow, that's the kind of salt you want to put in. But for cooking, chefs began recommending using kosher salt. You will often see in a recipe, use kosher salt. Well, mainly what they're saying is don't use iodized salt. because that can change the flavor. Kosher salt comes in either kind of flat flakes or the diamond crystals. And what chefs really like about it is if you're seasoning large amounts of things, you're not measuring out like in half teaspoons. You've got a bowl in front of you and you grab it with your fingers and you're spreading it with your hands and you're kind of feeling the amount of salt that you want to put in. So it becomes a habit, and whatever salt you use, you get used to that. Now I use sea salt primarily, and there's several kinds of sea salt. There's the kind that is evaporated from seawater directly, which is a ancient technique, and is not an industrial process and is has a very clean environmental record, because it's not using much except solar power to get it. Then there are also mined salts, like pink Himalayan salt, for example, because there are many places on the earth where there used to be oceans. And when the ocean went away, it left a layer of sea salt buried, and salt can be mined. So I tend to use, my favorite is the pink mined sea salt. That's what I just keep. And it has a lot of mineralization in it. Now, I like those kinds of minerals, the natural occurring trace minerals, and it does, I feel this is a little bit of a flavor enhancer, and nutritionally it's more complete. So that's kind of my choice, except for things where you want, like, if you want to make chocolate brownies with sea salt flaked on top, you want flakes, so you get a bigger chunk. So you use a flake salt for that, which can be a kosher salt or a flaked sea salt. So there, it's all sodium chloride in some form or other. But there are differences in how you use it and what you use.
Very good. Lots of options, and we have to learn about our salts. Yes. Very. Thanks for that information, Donna. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at the KHOI website, www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You know, this time of year, there's a lot of bounty. Donna talked about all the stuff in her kitchen. And I also talked about some big cooking pots falling on my head recently. And the reason those were up there is I don't use them all the time. But this time of year, I get down those big pots because it's jam and jelly time. I do enjoy making up batches of stuff because it's sweet. It's a way to put away the bounty. They make good Christmas presents, and everybody likes a little jam and jelly on their bread every now and then. This year, I had a really good time making some combinations of and some old favorites. One of the combinations that is a big hit is rhubarb orange, and that I kind of make in the early summer when the rhubarb is wet. It's kind of like marmalade with rhubarb in it, rhubarb orange. And this time of year, the crab apples have been bountiful this year, and they just happen to come at the same time that the elderberries are not exactly bountiful, but I got a really nice picking of elderberries. So I mixed the crab apple and elderberry together to make a very nice jelly referred to as crabby elderberry, and that is also a big hit. And another one I made was ground cherries. I like ground cherries, and that makes a lovely, bright yellow jam.
And hard to find.
Crab apples. ground cherries are related to tomatoes. They're sort of like tomatillos, but they're teeny tiny.
Yeah, they have the little husk on them,
very
and they are
lovely.
Delicious.
They're lovely. And if you can just be patient and fight the ground squirrels for them, you'll get enough to make some jam. And I recently made raspberry plum, because again, the raspberries came and I didn't quite have enough for a batch, but there were a few wild Iowa plums, and I also had a little package of plums left over from last year in the freezer, so raspberry plum was one, too.
See, yeah. The no recipe jams.
Well, I do have to refer to a recipe to get my quantities right, but I look up raspberry jam.
You have to measure the pectin and
measure
the
pectin.
Sugar.
I look up how much elderberry, and then you just add more. But, yeah. But again, that's some. Don't be afraid to play around. It's nice to get those different tastes all up in jars for the winter. Oh, we have something from the Dunalana Kitchen News Department. Tick a tick tick a tick tick a tick. That is our news ticker tape. Donna, what did
you
find?
Well, this is sort of not really good news, but so the Washington Post had an article. From sriracha to soba, why our favorite foods are in short supply. So, it goes by country, and it says in the United States, the sriracha sauce is hard to lay your hands on a bottle of
what
it.
What is sriracha sauce?
Sriracha sauce is that, you'll see that it's the jar with the rooster on it. It's a plastic jar with a rooster. Sriracha hot chili sauce. And it is made in California. It's based on an Asian recipe, but you know it's super hot.
So
and
that's
some
that's on tables all
everywhere.
Over Oriental
some people can't live without it. So, but apparently, we are having a supply chain problem because extreme weather is impacting the chili pepper crop in California.
Well, I would think they wouldn't be so good during those wildfires out there. Kind
of
roast
right.
them prematurely out there.
So, you know, that's what we're having trouble here. In the United Kingdom, I can live without sriracha, but if this happened here, I'd go and get my own cow, I guess. Butter is in short supply.
What?
And that is happening because, you know, when they did their Brexit, they lost a lot of their farm workers.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Apparently in England, they have gotten rid of their peasant class and they were importing them, right?
Oh.
So the farm workers were all coming, you know, largely from Eastern Europe and places like that. And now they can't come and they are undermining the food security of Britain because you can't get butter very much. And so they're limiting the amount of butter that people have. In France, and we've talked about this.
Oh, yeah.
What they are short of is mustard.
Uh-oh.
Which is like French people eat mustard the way we eat ketchup here. You cannot have the ham sandwich without the mustard, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason they are having problems is because Northern European mustards, the German mustards, use yellow mustard seeds to make their mustard. Now, that they may have problems with that too because a lot of mustard is grown in the Ukraine. But the French mustard is made with brown mustard seeds. Now they used to grow enough in France and now in the last global economy, they had been buying scads of mustard seeds from, I think, Saskatchewan. Anyway, someplace in Canada, where they had a
crop failure.
Yeah, right. Ah. Yes, mostly from Canada, because of, I think, not enough rain.
Oh.
Hello. So they don't have enough mustard seeds to make the French mustard. Zut alors! Huh? Then Lebanon is, of course, we've been reading about this because of and hopefully it's starting to resolve because they are starting to move the grain out of the Ukraine and Russia through the Black Sea? Whichever sea is up there through Odessa. They've reached a truce on that, but in Lebanon they were having a bread shortage. And this is when, you know, give us this day our daily bread. Bread is in many countries still, and it's somewhat even here, it's, you know, it's the main thing people eat. And that can cause huge political upheaval because a lot of people need to eat, right? It's not stable. Pakistan is having a tea shortage, although now with the floods, tea might be the least of their problems. That's what a disaster story. My goodness, that's so sad. Australia is having an egg shortage.
Eggs!
And they're saying that they're putting buying limits on the eggs. It's blamed on the lingering impacts of the coronavirus impact, which disrupted supply chains, and the weather winter means fewer eggs are being laid by the free-range chickens. Somalia is having a grain problem, among other things, because made worse by climate change. They're on the brink of the global food supply is just getting, it's not so efficient anymore.
Well, we're talking brink of famine, not just a little short of the Grey Poupon here.
But, and in Japan, they are short of soba noodles, and this is because soba noodles have some buckwheat in them, and they're not getting the buckwheat that they usually get out of the Ukraine.
Well, see, we are all connected. Yeah. We are all connected, and shortages. Yeah, shortages. Okay,
well, I noticed last night we were having dinner with some friends, and all of us were you cannot buy in Ames any arborio rice, which is what you need for making risotto. And that's because in Italy they're having the driest summer in like 100 years or something, and their production is way down. I mean, this is, it's not like we're starving, but we are being very inconvenienced, I have to say.
A little tape back, oh my goodness, we are connected to the rest of the world, and we are connected to farmers and laborers around the world, too.
And there's so many disruptions at once, politics,
sake.
Weather, who knows?
Who knows? So if you've got something to make and cook in your kitchen, you are doing well.
Yeah, and be glad if your pantry is stocked up. Then you won't run out.
Right. Fill it up with jelly jars. That's good. Oh, another thing I made out of elderberries. I almost heard about this, but I never have done it, and I did it. As opposed to taking things to elderberry jelly, I just boiled a bunch down for elderberry tonic. And I just made it, just boiled it down,
down. That's supposedly an immune system stimulant.
Yeah.
So when you have a cold, you're supposed to drink a few teaspoons of it.
Right. I mean, you can go to the drugstore and they sell you it in different kind of forms.
Yeah, they sell. There's a brand name called Sambucol, which is mostly elderberry. Rather pricey.
See, I saw that rather pricey thing.
Yeah.
And elderberries, if you've got a friend with a bush, or if you find a nice road ditch here in Iowa,
they're
elderberries,
everywhere.
They don't even have thorns. It's so easy to
snip
off the elderberry.
Only thing you got to do is beat the birds to them.
And boil those things down. Yes, that's. I did add a little lemon juice because elderberry can be kind of bland.
I find it metallic tasting.
It is. But that means it must be awfully good for you.
Well, that's why I thought for you to put the crab apple with it. If you put tart with it, it does make it more palatable.
It does. It livens it up, and people like to start their day with crabby elderberry. It sort of puts people in a good mood.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we have we talked about pantry things today, and in the future shows, we have other pantry adventures coming up, because there's always something going on, and hopefully we will not set our kitchen on fire, nor we will have things fall from high places onto our nose. We hope that things do not blow up like in Boston, where they had the flood of molasses in 1919. Oh my goodness. So take a look on what you have in your pantry and be adventurous and make something for dinner tonight. Try something different. After all, ketchup is a vegetable. You can use that up and, it's good. It's good. Well, you've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find us here at KHOI 89.1 FM. We're here live at noon, or we're repeated at 7 p.m., or go to khoifm.org and find out more about this radio station. But you can stream this show and lots more any old time. And the Donalana Kitchen has a podcast, so you can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen there. Music today by the Barn Owl Band. We heard Texas Gals Swinging on a Gate, and we'll go out with It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing, and we all know what that's about. My name is Lana Nafigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.